Michael Barclay's guest will be another prize-winning novelist, Adam Folds. That's next Sunday at 12 midday. Private Passions is a classic arts production for BBC Radio 3. This is BBC Radio 3. Very good afternoon from me, John Shea, with you this Sunday afternoon. In a couple of minutes, we have music by the 17th century Venetian composer Giovanni Legrenzi in today's edition of the Early Music Show. Now, though, with the time just after 1 o'clock, here's David Cornett with the latest BBC News.
China has called for an emergency meeting of envoys from the six countries which have been involved in the talks aimed at ending North Korea's nuclear weapons programme. The meeting would bring together the two Koreas, the United States, Japan, Russia and China itself. The US and South Korea have begun joint naval exercises in the Yellow Sea in response to the shelling of a South Korean island by the North last week. European finance ministers are expected to approve the terms of a major bailout for the Irish Republic today. Officials have spent the past 10 days thrashing out the details with the Irish government. Around half of the expected €85 billion of loans would be used to prop up Ireland's failed banks. American officials are continuing to warn governments around the world about thousands of confidential messages from the State Department, which are expected to be posted online tonight by the WikiLeaks website. The journalist Simon Hoggart of The Guardian, one of three newspapers to have seen the documents in advance, says the revelations will be embarrassing for Gordon Brown, but he said there'd be more embarrassment for David Cameron because a number of messages showed that he wasn't very highly regarded by the Obama administration. The polls have opened in Haiti's presidential election. President René Préval is barred by law from standing for re-election. The country, which was hit by an earthquake in January, is struggling to cope with a cholera epidemic. In Brazil, police say they've taken control of a shanty town in Rio de Janeiro, which had been run by drug traffickers. Heavily armed officers, supported by helicopters and armed vehicles, entered the narrow streets this morning. Hundreds of the traffickers have refused to surrender and are reported to have barricaded themselves in. And the weather forecast for this afternoon is for heavy snow, mainly in eastern and central Scotland, but spreading west to Northern Ireland later. Snow showers will continue along south and east coasts, spreading inland at times. Elsewhere, it'll be dry and cold, with sunny intervals. Temperatures will stay below freezing point in most areas. BBC News and weather at approaching 3 minutes past one.
David Cornett, thank you very much. Well, Fiona Talkington is here in just under an hour to present more of your Radio 3 requests. Join her for that at 2 o'clock. And then after that, as today is the first Sunday in Advent, at 4 o'clock we've a service for Advent with carols, the traditional live broadcast from the chapel of St John's College, Cambridge. That's this afternoon at 4. Before all that, here on BBC Radio 3, it's time now for the Early Music Show with Lucy Skeeping.
Welcome to the show. Well, in keeping with our tradition of featuring some of the less well-known composers from the past, today we're exploring the life, and I hope you'll agree, the truly beautiful music of an Italian composer of the mid-17th century, Giovanni Legrenzi. And how nice that his story is, in the main, one of ambition fulfilled, of a man from humble beginnings who rose to take on the top job in Venice, that of musical director at St Mark's. But Legrenzi wasn't just a big fish in a relatively small sea. Even I was surprised to discover that he was quite a major force in the Italian Baroque, whose music was to influence Bach, Handel, Vivaldi, Scarlatti and Purcell, to name but a few. Legrenzi came from a musical family. His father was a parish violinist who dabbled in composing himself, so it was natural that his talented son, whose skills on the organ had so impressed the congregation of his small hometown in Clusone, would take his first professional post at the nearby city of Bergamo as organist at Santa Maria Maggiore. This was a magnificent church with a long and distinguished history of good music, so it was an excellent training ground for the 18-year-old Legrenzi, who remained firmly within its confines for some years, producing sacred music for the choir. But in the 1650s, Legrenzi was thinking about moving on. And with the publication of his first opus, a church mass, he was keen to make his name in the wider world. Let's hear the credo from the mass. Just four singers and an instrumental ensemble led by two concertanti violins with continuo, typical of the sort of small-scale forces that would have been heard in churches throughout northern Italy at this time.
Thank you. trascendit, trascendit in celum, sedet ad dexteram patris, sedet ad dexteram, sedet ad dexteram patris,
Sedet ad dexteram patris.
the Credo from Giovanni Lagrenzi's Mass Opus 1. Leah Serafini was the soprano, Andrea Arrivabene the alto, with tenor and bass Raffaele Giordani and Walter Testolin, respectively. Officina Musicum was directed by Riccardo Favero. During his time in Bergamo, Lagrenzi was ordained as a priest and became resident chaplain of Santa Maria Maggiore. He served as organist under three maestri di cappella, the last of whom, Maurizio Casati, made a particularly big impression on him, introducing him to a new kind of genre. This was the idea, imported from forward-looking Venice, of having chamber music performed in church during the Mass. And in fact, these early instrumental pieces, church sonatas as they were called, were to become a big part of Lagrenzi's output, copied and studied by several of his successors, including Bach and Vivaldi in particular, who, as we'll hear later, towards the end of Lagrenzi's life, was to become one of his pupils in Venice. It's good to know, though, that Cazzati, as well as being Lagrenzi's mentor and, of course, his boss for a good many years, was also a friend and a supporter, particularly since Cazzati doesn't seem to have been an easygoing type. In fact, sources indicate he was rather a spiky character, often falling out with his colleagues when they criticise his composing techniques. Here's one of his church sonatas, number 4 in G minor, La Sampiera, performed by the Parley of Instruments.
Thank you.
sonata heard in church in 17th century Italy, La Sampiera by Maurizio Cazzati, colleague and friend of Giovanni Legrenzi, the composer we're exploring today. So Legrenzi had come a long way. He was organist at one of Italy's most important churches, second only to St Mark's in Venice, in fact. But he was clearly not content to remain where he was. His next task was to seek patronage, to gain employment perhaps at the court of one of the powerful rulers of the day. And so for his second publication, a set of 18 trio sonatas, he named each one after an important figure who he hoped might be useful to him. One of them was Count Porcia, the tutor to no less a person than the Holy Roman Emperor Leopold I. We'll hear the sonata Legrenzi dedicated to him first. It's gorgeous, inventive music, I think. You can hear the beginnings of Corelli in it. And I really like the sweet little pizzicato section, the smooth, flowing long bow strokes and unexpected changes of rhythm. Sonata La Porcia is followed by La Valvassona.
Thank you.
two sonatas by Giovanni Legrenzi, La Porcia and La Valvasona, named after two powerful gents who the composer hoped might help him on his way. You're listening to me, Lucy Skeeping, and this is the Early Music Show on BBC Radio 3. Well, Legrenzi did finally wrench himself away from Bergamo at the age of 30. His destination, Ferrara, where he had a job waiting for him as Maestro di Cappella of the Accademia dello Spirito Santo. It was quite a culture shock in Ferrara after provincial Bergamo. This was a big, lively city. Here, everything and anything seemed possible, and the ambitious Legrenzi now became aware of the possibilities and the excitements of composing for the theatre, for the opera. He made friends and useful contacts easily, and at least one libretto was supplied by a nobleman who was a great help when it came to getting his operas staged, both in Venice and in Vienna. Nevertheless, it wasn't all plain sailing, and the next few years were rather difficult. Legrenzi seems to have been unable to find the sort of employment he wanted. He applied for work in Venice and in other northern cities, even further afield at the Habsburg court, but there was nothing doing. The idea of returning to Bergamo was simply not on, although they would have had him back. And to add to his frustration, it seems that at one point he was actually offered a position at the court of Louis XIV, but he couldn't go because of ill health. However, by 1670, all seems to have been resolved, and we find Legrenzi in Venice as musical director of one of the city's four educational institutions, the Ospedale dei Derelitti. The lively, the magical, colourful Venetian Republic was destined to be his long-term home. In fact, he remained there for the rest of his life, earning a thoroughly good living and, just as importantly, the respect of other composers. The young J.S. Bach, for instance, wove an intricate organ fugue around a theme from one of Legrenzi's compositions, which we'll hear in a moment. But first, music by Handel, who drew on one of Legrenzi's motets for a chorus in Samson. O first created beam, let there be light, and light there was over all.
Let there be light.
an organ fugue by Bach, performed by Marie-Claire Alain. And before that, we heard the 16 and the Symphony of Harmony and Invention, directed by Harry Christophers, with the chorus of Israelites from Handel's oratorio Samson. In 1681, 11 years after he arrived in Venice, came the kind of high-profile position that Legrenzi had had his eye on for so long. He was appointed Vice Maestro of the Basilica of St. Mark's. Mind you, while church music was a huge, shall we say, industry in the city, it was opera more and more that was setting the place alight and attracting the crowds, both the locals and the hordes of tourists who, like today, arrived in their droves to indulge in the sights, the processions, the colours, and quite often the notorious ladies of the night. Legrenzi may have been full-time at St. Mark's, but his opera composing flourished. In fact, he was his most prolific in this area, producing 2 a year, quite a feat considering each was between 3 and 5 hours long. These operas tended to be on heroic or comic themes, with convoluted plots, large casts and complex special effects. In keeping with tradition and audience tastes, the arias were kept short and sharp, with the occasional short recitative. It was the perfect medium for Legrenzi to demonstrate his ability to write beautiful, attractive melodies the public would go away humming, alongside some musical experimentation, some of it quite ahead of its time. Well, it's not often I get the chance to introduce the one and only Pavarotti on the Early Music Show, but here he is in fine form in an aria from Legrenzi's opera Eteocle e Polinici.
Fiero costume da ligero nume che a forza di pene si faccia adorar, si faccia adorar, che a forza di pene si faccia adorar. Eppur nell'ardore il Dio traditore un vago sembiante mi fe idolatrar. Un vago sembiante mi fe idolatrare. Che fiero costume da ligero nume che a forza di bene si faccia adorar, si faccia adorar, che a forza di bene si faccia adorar. Che crudo destino che un cieco bambino con bocca di latte si faccia stimar, si faccia stimar, con bocca di latte si faccia stimar. Ma questo tiranno con barbaro inganno entrando per gli occhi mi fe sospirare. Entrando per gli occhi mi fe sospirar. Che crudo destino che un cieco bambino con bocca di latte si faccia stimar, si faccia stimar, con bocca di latte si faccia stimar.
Luciano Pavarotti making a rare appearance on the Early Music Show with an aria from one of Legrenzi's operas from late 17th century Venice. Well, Legrenzi now had everything he dreamed of, the top job at St. Mark's, a flourishing opera career, and friends and patrons in the highest places. The little church organist from the suburbs of Bergamo had done good. True, he had bouts of ill health, but he enjoyed his last years directing at the Basilica and teaching students, Vivaldi and Antonio Lotti among them. He lived with his sister Giovanna in a house that became a real meeting place for musicians, and we know that in one of the concerts held there, 3 French sisters performed duets and trios by Legrenzi's direct contemporary, Versailles' favourite maestro, Lully. Perhaps they included this one in their concerts, Lully's Petit Motet, Domine Salvum.
Thank you.
a motet for three female voices by Lully, Domine Salvum, performed by members of Les Arts Florissants, directed by William Christie. In spite of living and working in that great opera capital, Venice, in spite of all his success, Ligrenzi was ultimately a serious and devout man. Other musicians at St. Mark's had sometimes allowed the lucrative business of opera writing to overshadow their church duties. But now, in his final years, Ligrenzi put aside his theatre work and concentrated on building up the music at St. Mark's back to its former glory, including hiring record numbers of players and singers, much to the concern of the authorities, who, of course, had to find extra funds to pay them. His death came slowly after a painful illness, probably gallstones, and although his legacy lived on for some years, we hear little of his output today. Let's hear the kind of music that was perhaps Ligrenzi's first love, music that celebrated the glory of God. O Mirandum Mysterium, a wondrous mystery. The king is born in a stable. His mother seals the pure lips of her dear Christ with a kiss and sings quietly to him. Sleep, eyes, brightest stars, blessed little torches, sleep and show us heaven.
Mysterium,
O Mirandum Mysterium from Giovanni Legrenzi's Motetti Sacri a Voce Sola. Robin Blaise was the countertenor. Peter Holman directed the parley of instruments. And that ends today's edition of the Early Music Show. It was presented by Lucy Skeeping and produced by Asma Mani. This is BBC Radio 3, where in 2 hours from now we'll be going live to the chapel of St John's College, Cambridge, for a service for Advent with carols. You can hear that at 4 o'clock, and it'll be followed by this week's edition of Discovering Music a little later than usual at 5:30. Now, though, at a minute or two after 2 o'clock, it's time for Radio 3 Requests with Fiona Talkington.
Moonlight and Romance. Tchaikovsky, Beethoven and Mendelssohn are all among your requests this afternoon, so I hope you can stay tuned over the next couple of hours. This first piece, which has been asked for by Jeremy Evers from Cardiff, is a musical picture of a publicity stunt arranged in 1896 by William J. Crush, a spectacular collision between two engines on the Missouri, Kansas and Texas Railway, known as the Katy Line. Scott Joplin's The Great Crush Collision March, played by Philip Dyson.
Thank you. Scott Joplin's rather graphic Great Crush Collision March, played by Philip Dyson, who I had the pleasure of meeting at the Scott Joplin Festival in Missouri some years ago. Jeremy Evers wanted to hear that and said that it was one of the pieces he used to play himself when he was young. Maybe that's inspired you to go back to playing again, Jeremy. Stephen Smith from St Albans heard a piece by Boccherini a few years ago on Radio 3, which intrigued him because it included a part for castanets. Apparently Boccherini wasn't too keen on the Spanish style, but he succumbs here with a guitar joining the string quartet as well. The Artaria Quartet is joined by the guitarist Richard Savino, and the castanets are played by Peter Mundt.